Hello, my name is Dr. Christian Heim.
And my name is Dr. Caroline Heim.
We've got some exciting news.
We'll be talking about all things relationship.
All things relationship?
All things relationship.
That's a lot to talk about, Caroline.
Well, we've got a lot of talk shows to talk about it.
We have a lot of talk shows to talk about it, but what we are going to do is we're going to look at a study that has been done on relationships so that everything is backed by the science that we talk about here, and then we'll be looking at how you can apply some of that science into your life and into your relationship, and we will be looking at those relationship issues that perhaps we all come across and need a little bit of help in from time to time, Caroline.
Yeah, so it's really for people that are perhaps struggling in their relationship or want to make their relationship better, whether you're just starting out in a relationship, you're 20 years in, you're 50 years in. It's actually for anyone that's in a relationship, in a long-term relationship or wants to be in a long-term relationship.
And it's not only for people who are struggling, not only for people who are looking at a relationship, but if you're in a good relationship, hey, there's nothing wrong with making a good thing better.
Absolutely.
So we will see you, or you will hear us, on Friday night, 9 p.m.
Friday night, ET, so New York time, at 9 p.m.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Christian Heim.
And I'm Dr. Caroline Heim.
And I'm a clinical psychiatrist.
And I am an associate professor. Welcome to episode 7 of our Resilient Relationships talk show.
Okay, so what are we talking about today, Caroline?
Today, good question. We are talking about, today's topic actually is why, today's topic is, what did our research show are the 5 burning questions younger couples wanted to ask people married 40 plus years?
Okay, that's actually an exciting topic. I'm really looking forward to that. And as always, through this episode, we'll be bringing you the science, some of the stories from couples that we surveyed and interviewed, and some helpful tips along the way.
Great. So the evidence today actually comes from our book and specifically our survey of 290 younger couples worldwide. And we actually asked them the question, if you could ask people married 40 plus years a question, what would it be?
So we're focusing today on the questions that these younger couples asked rather than the answers, because there's a lot of lessons to be learned just in what people ask and what people actually wanted to know.
Most definitely.
Okay, so this survey, first of all, the context is really quite important because the importance of the context was that this was during COVID. Not that we're interested in COVID anymore, but it actually gave us an amazing opportunity because during COVID, people were brought into close relationship with each other, and COVID actually meant that there were relationships that were under pressure, that there were relationships that actually broke up, but there were relationships, a lot of relationships that discovered something deeper about each other. But what I was excited about was that COVID gave us the opportunity to put a survey together where people would actually confront their relationship. And because of that, we actually got a good response to the questions that we asked. Otherwise, people just let things slide.
They do. And I guess they had time to think about their relationship more. You know, they didn't have the pressures, the external pressures of the world around them.
Yeah, so we're not thankful for the COVID situation at all. But one thing that we're thankful for is it afforded us an opportunity to ask these things, and people felt pressured enough and needed to find some insight for their relationships so that we had good numbers for this survey and we're able to deduce a few things through these things that people asked, and we have it now in our book.
We do.
All right.
That's it.
Where are we going?
I think we just actually just say that, like, the top 5 responses.
The top 5 responses.
The top 5 responses. So the top 5 burning questions that the younger couples wanted to ask people that were married 40 plus years. So the number 1 question was, what is your secret to staying together? Number 2 was, is the spark still there? Number 3 was, how do you stop arguing and get through hard times? Number 4 was, how do you keep your marriage fun and not boring? And number 5 was, how do you keep connected and communicate well?
Okay, so Caroline, thanks for that. You've given us sort of those 5 questions sort of right off the bat. And through that, we've got some idea of what people are concerned about, what they expect from their marriages, what they hope is going to happen. So just to summarize, it's sort of like, how do you keep it together at all?
Yeah.
Is the spark still there? So the question on the sex.
We knew that question would be there.
We knew that question would be there. Well, we were hoping it would be there.
We were hoping we'd be there from those younger couples, yeah.
That's right. Then a question on arguing.
Yes.
Then, correct me if I'm wrong, it was a question on emotional connection?
No, it's actually keeping the marriage fun and not boring.
Keeping the marriage fun and not boring. Okay. And then the last one was the emotional connection.
It was.
Okay, good.
That's it.
That's it. Okay. So that says a lot of itself. So that first question of how you keep your relationship together, I suppose that became the springboard for the whole of our book, because our book is about resilient relationships. How do you keep your relationship together for so long? Because if you don't keep your relationship together, then all the other questions fall by the wayside. You're not going to have that spark for sex. You're not going to want to know how to argue well. You're not going to want to keep the emotional connection. So that's the springboard. However, altogether, those five questions tell us a lot about the thinking of young couples in today's society.
Yeah, and I actually have a comment, well, it's a question here that one of the couples asked about, that gives it a bit of a broad picture and shows you what they're really up against
in this
world. So this was a young woman that had been married for 3 to 5 years, so she was in that bracket, and she said, how do you overcome the powerful influence of external world issues and their effects on the internal world of your relationship?
Okay, that's such a beautiful question. Such a beautiful question. It's got warmth because it shows that there is this internal world that we have in our relationships, and it's precious to us. That is actually keeps a fire going, that warmth, that glow in our hearts. But there's an external world that's kind of impinging on it. And that external world can, in a way, pour cold water on the warmth of a relationship.
Yeah, and I think that is a lot of pressure. It's social media pressure. It's what they're seeing in the media in general of what relationships should be. And for this couple, it was obviously putting a lot of pressure on their relationship to perhaps, you know, construct their relationship in those terms. And how can they just push all that aside and just be with each other?
Yeah. Yeah, so if you look at the title of our book, Resilient Relationships, Techniques for Surviving Hyper-Individualism, Social Isolation, and a Mental Health Crisis, they're the three things. They're the context that's impinging on a relationship, particularly hyper-individualism, where there's this idea out in society today that we've all got to live life my way, do things that I want in my career and my experiences. And how do you keep a relationship going when that is the main context? And the other context, of course, is the mental health crisis, which is difficult on all of us, and social isolation, which comes a lot from, as you mentioned, social media, where keeping glued to a screen and online is keeping us away from looking at each other in the face and communicating who we are to another person.
Yeah, that's so true. This participant actually went on to say, with the definition of a relationship changing so much and now being so amorphous, how do you manage your own understanding of what your relationship is?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, this is a deep thinker, this one, just in a survey, but clearly was really grappling and struggling with this. And that's it. That's that external pressure that she was talking about originally, too, because the definition of relationship is changing and even in her time of, you know, her lifespan.
Right. So that, again, brings in a broader question that I'm very interested in, because, again, it goes to a core of what a relationship is. Just because there's a society that says that our definition of a relationship is changing doesn't mean that your relationship definition needs to change. So the question that I actually want to put out there is, what do you understand by a relationship? What do you, as an individual, think a relationship is, what you expect from a relationship, what do you want from a relationship, what do you give to a relationship. And because those definitions are changing all around us, and yeah, we're changing from that traditional monogamy to a whole lot of other frameworks, does that really affect you? Do you really need to change? Do you really want to change? And for some people, the question will be yes. But I actually want to put out there that for most people, the answer is going to be no. That, no, if I can actually keep this relationship together, that's what I want. In fact, that brings us to the question number one that people were asking. How do you keep it together? 95% of these coupled individuals ask that question. How do you keep it together? I know you're saying no, but I looked it up just beforehand.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so
that was in the younger bracket.
Oh, in the younger bracket. Okay, yeah. So this they were asking questions. So let's just go to some of the actual questions that they asked for us to have a look at that, the secret.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I still want to keep it in this context of this changing idea of what a relationship is.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's a bit of a mismatch. There's this idea that a relationship is supposed to change, and yet we had such a high percentage of people, 70% overall, that wanted to know, how do I keep it together?
Yeah. Yeah, and these are some of the questions they asked. How did you last so long? How is it even possible? What made you stick around for so long? What is your special secret? What is your key tip? What is the secret to long marriage? What is the key to staying together? What is the secret to being happy? Give us the secret. Give us the key. We want to know. We can't keep a relationship together for 40 days, let alone 40 years. Tell us how to do it.
Yeah, so I suppose we're emphasizing this because I'm not sure how many people go into a long-term relationship saying, I only want this to last for about 5 years or 10 years. Now, we're not talking about casual relationships, okay, which a lot of people are into before they actually find their long-term relationship. But when you find that long-term person and you're saying, yes, you're the person for me, how many people actually want their definition of relationship to change? I don't think as many as we're getting that impression of.
Yeah, I think we need to actually go back to some Shakespeare on that. This above all else to thine own self be true. So that's from Hamlet. And you could actually extrapolate that and say, this above all else to thine own relationship be true, or your own needs and desires as a couple be true.
Ah, there's the rub, because what you have done is you have gone straight from your needs as an individual to your needs as a couple.
Mm.
So in there is an assumption, which I think is a beautiful assumption, that once you're in a long-term relationship, that you wanted to stay together so that you move from the sense of me to a sense of we.
Yeah, so very important. And again, that's the pressure of society trying to say you've got to get your needs met, you've got to get what you want and your desires. That's uppermost in a marriage, when you're going into particularly a long-term relationship, make sure you get what you want instead of, and I think that pressure is in society at the moment. It didn't used to be there, but it certainly is there.
Okay.
Your needs.
It is a very, very strong pressure, and particularly young people that I see in my office, they not only respond to this pressure, but they actually have this pressure. So I want to argue against what I've been saying up until now. So up until now, I've been saying, look, be true to yourself. Make sure that you have the values that you want, and make sure that you follow through with the definition of a relationship that you actually want. But there's a society out there that tells you that you've got to be your own person. And so to defend a relationship mentality to people saying that you need to have an individual mentality becomes really difficult. And this is one of the major challenges, I think, for relationships today. Even a decade and a half ago, society itself was supporting relationships more. Whereas now there's like this tendency to, what are you doing in a relationship? You've got to move on. You've got to sort of do something for yourself and leave the relationship behind. And so that pressure is becoming more and more. And that's one of the pressures of hyper-individualism, making sure that you write a self-chosen and self-informed self-story.
That's one of our definitions in our book, isn't it?
That something like that.
Self-story that you're actually creating. And then, therefore, a together story with your partner.
And again, you've moved from a self-story to a together story, which, again, is a assumption that I like. But that's the actual pressure.
Mm.
Because once you start off with somebody new, how do you know that they've got that value, that value of wanting to go from me to we? And these are the things that become so important to talk about before you make that final commitment to say, are we on the same page, so that we can move towards a together written, together life story.
I like that. Okay. Should we have a look at number two now?
Yeah, I think we should, because basically everything that we talk about is based on that question one.
Yes, that's right. But all the other four points are, really. Is that what you're saying?
So they all are. That's the premise. If you don't keep a relationship together, then all these other questions that we're going to talk about almost become superfluous.
Mm.
And this is what people actually expect of relationships. And this is something that I like emphasizing, that although that there is an idea out there that the framework of a relationship is changing, that perhaps people don't actually want that. Perhaps as Shakespeare tells us, if we are true to our own selves, we actually want our relationships to last a long time.
Yeah. Okay. And part of that is keeping the spark alive.
Spark alive, most definitely.
Okay, so that is number two. Is the spark still there? Very, very burning question for these young people. So they were very interested in how do you maintain the spark? How do you keep the spark going? How do you keep the fire burning? And then they were asking questions. Do you still have sex? Is the sex still good? So they're asking, remember, just to remind you, they're asking questions of people that have been married 40 plus years.
Yes.
They do actually want to know, how do you keep the fire going when you are old and grey?
Oh, really easy, really easy. Gasoline.
Christian. Great.
All right, but this shows how important sex is to young people.
Yeah.
Not just now, but for their future. There is the science shows that after the age of 60, that frequency of sex and intensity of sex does wane as testosterone wanes in the body. But that doesn't mean that the spark disappears.
Mm.
The spark is still there. When you've been together 40 years, though, the spark perhaps means something deeper, I would put to people.
Yeah, and it most definitely does, yeah.
Yeah, and we live in a sexualized society, and there is a lot of reason for saying that our society is too sexualized, but sex is very fundamental to what life actually is. It's very life-affirming. And so that whole energy is something so precious that our young people, they want it to be part of the relationship when it's old. So the first thing I need to say is that physiologically, the spark goes at 60 if you're in a relationship or not. So that's going to happen anyway. But being in a relationship is actually part of keeping that spark alive.
Mm, most definitely. And I think the obviously preoccupation with it the young couples have a preoccupation with it at their age. Yeah, funnily enough. We did actually ask them the question how satisfying, you know, if they had a satisfying or dissatisfying sex life, and 68% said they had a very satisfying, sex life, and only 11% had a dissatisfying sex life.
Okay, so this is
the younger couples that are together, that are just sort of starting out on their journey together.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear.
It is. It's great to hear. So obviously this is going to be, is the spark still there? But this idea that, how do you keep the fire going when you're old and grey? They even asked about the life after 60, basically. How do you still have an active sex life after 60?
Okay. So one thing that I want to say is that if people are in their 20s and their 30s and they want an active sex life in their 60s and their 70s, there's much more chance that they're going to have it. because you start embedding what sex means and how sexual expression is in your relationship, early in your relationship, so that that can carry through. Or if you're finding problems in that area, then you're able to make adjustments along the way.
Okay. What else do we want to talk about?
What else do we want to talk about sex? Just that it is important, and that the studies show that being in a relationship means that you have more and better quality sex, and that the spark is often talked about in terms of illicit sex. So in being attracted to people that are not your partner, that kind of makes things exciting. But actually, when you're in relationship with one person and you explore that person, and I don't mean physically, but I mean actually emotionally and mentally, you actually uncover more areas in that person so that the spark becomes more than just physical. It becomes emotional, mental, and for some people, even spiritual.
That's exactly what happens. Yeah. So some of the younger couples were already starting to think in those terms. Some of the questions were, how do you keep the affection alive and the romance alive? And do you still get the butterflies in your stomach when they walk in the room and things like that? So they weren't all just talking about sex. They were interested in the romance. They were interested in affection too. And intimacy in its many forms.
Yeah, intimacy in its many forms. So there is physical intimacy, there is emotional intimacy, and even mental and spiritual intimacy, which all get explored in the context of a relationship. Because you have the opportunity to go deeper, it takes years for some people to get to know their own sexuality. And so that gets explored within the framework of a marriage or a long-term relationship. And then to explore emotional, mental, and spiritual intimacy and have that all expressed in that act of lovemaking, that actually takes a whole lot of time and takes a whole lot of practice. And practice can be fun.
Sure can. Yeah. Now, did you want to talk about the disgust response at all?
The disgust response?
Yeah, talking about that a bit earlier when we were preparing for this.
Okay, yeah. So just to put that into context, it's actually quite normal for children to get a disgust response at thinking about their parents having sex. Because when we're adolescents and young adults, sex seems to be something very physical and devoid of the marriage or love or the family context. Whereas the further you get into a long-term relationship, the more you actually entwine that idea of sex into your love journey. So in society, the way that I see it anyway, is we have this very strange separation of sex and love. And there is a separation because there are, you can get out there and enjoy sex physically only without the love. Mm. But when you combine it with the love, it becomes deeper, more satisfying, and it opens a whole new world that only gets discovered, I believe, in the context. It only gets discovered, as the science tells us, in a long-term relationship.
It just goes deeper then.
It can go deeper, yes.
Yeah, it can go deeper. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone has different experiences. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, great. Well, I think we'll move on to the next question, have a look at some of their interesting questions about this one. So this one, number three of the questions that they asked, had questions that they had for people that were married 40 plus years, the young couples, was how do you stop arguing and get through hard times? So they're arguing, they're new in their relationship, and also, you know, that's part of getting through hard times, getting through adversity. So arguing is coupled with adversity there. So they're saying things like, how do you keep from fighting all the time? Because arguing is called fighting a lot in the United States.
Yep.
So these are couples, by the way, from about 24 different countries all over the world. How many times did you almost divorce, and how did you come back together stronger after arguing? So this is about hard times. Do the arguments over small petty issues ever really go away?
Yeah.
So they're the kind of questions there's how do you resolve arguments? How do you let go of hurt? How do you handle the extreme differences when you have arguments? There's everything. There's every question under the sun on arguing.
So elsewhere we talk about arguing, and we'll have some podcasts just on arguing because it's just such a fun topic, arguing, isn't it?
It's great. I love it. But I've learnt it. So I didn't argue when I was a child. I never saw my parents argue. So I had a lot of fun in our marriage arguing. I got to know what it's all about.
Yeah, but on top of it, it is hard. It is hard.
Yeah, but it's also hard.
And I suppose that's what these questions tell us. First of all, they tell us that young couples are arguing.
Yes.
So, and first of all, I've got to say congratulations for arguing, because the science is beginning to show more and more that arguing couples do better than couples that don't argue.
Mm.
So, first of all, let's take away that assumption that there's something wrong with arguing, because you will argue with another human being if you start speaking to them.
Yes.
Because they are a free agent, they have their own autonomy, they have their own will and their own ideas, and that is what is enriching about another human being. So you're going to get into that area. But, oh my gosh, some of those comments tell us that it gets hurtful, that they think of divorcing, they think of separating, because an argument can get that intense. And they can. And so asking this question also tells us that they don't want to break up over an argument. They want to have those techniques to be able to come back together and leave it alone.
Yes, they do want the techniques. And interestingly, one of the questions that we also asked in the survey was, you know, have you come up with any ideas about how to deal with arguing and stress in your relationship?
Yeah.
And I just want to share one story from two registered nurses. So I'll read it out. As two registered nurses, the stress and anxiety we both feel can easily wear away at our new marriage. We prioritize our marriage and we sit down and talk through our feelings before and after work. We want to make sure we don't project our stress, anxiety, and frustration on our partner, but acknowledge each other's feelings. It allows us to be understanding of each other when one might be kind of short-worded, moody, or angry, or withdrawn even for a short period of time. So we notice each other's feelings, but the most important thing is so that we don't argue, we sit down and talk about our feelings once a week.
Oh, that's an amazing story. First of all, for its candor in being able to say that arguing is a problem in our relationship, but they've already given us some solutions there, which is just wonderful. Sitting down and talking about their relationship once a week, listening to each other. Listening is amazing, because one of the most amazing experiences that we can have as a human being is to be fully heard, and to have a love partner close to you who actually will listen to you. And perhaps not even interrupt until you've said all of your piece, so that they fully understand you. That is an amazing feeling, and it deepens the relationship. Now, there's going to come the time when they say, well, I don't agree with this and I don't like that, and you're going to have to listen to them. But if you can get to that point where together you are both able to listen to each other and come to deeper, that's going to be an important word, a deeper understanding and a deeper relationship, then you will feel that even the arguing is worthwhile.
Yeah. I mean, it is really hard when you're first in the marriage, and there's a lot of heat that gets built up, and you've got to get it out. You've got to have, you know, open that pressure valve and let it out at times. But I like the idea that they're starting to get to know each other, these registered nurses. They're starting to know each other's strengths and weaknesses, and that it's not always great to escalate straight away to an argument. So they've worked out a way, which is, I guess, that pressure valve, to just opening that up, to just say, okay, let's just let a bit of the steam out once a week just by talking, and then maybe it won't escalate into a huge argument.
Yes. So an argument, in a sense, is a conversation with a lot of emotion behind it. And the passion that people have in an argument is reflective of how much they care, not only about themselves, but care about being heard by somebody else. It is actually very important that their love partner gets them and gets to understand them and know them and validate them and accept them.
Mm, very important.
All right, there was a comment there about arguing about petty things too.
Yes.
Now, that that actually says that younger couples will argue about petty things, and that kind of makes sense because a relationship is an amazingly complex universe unto itself, and it's like you've got to explore every little thing, and just the logistics of living together or doing life together means that you're going to come across a whole lot of little things that you do differently, and that's what they're doing, but engage in that process to drive the relationship along.
Yeah, all those little things, those little niggling things. And hey, they don't always change over time, I'm telling you. But all the niggly things can still be there after many years. But, you know, it's how you manage them.
What? I still have some little niggling things after all these years?
Oh, yes. As do I. Yeah. Okay, so let's go on to the next one, which is the next question the younger couples had for older couples, which is, how do you keep your marriage fun and not boring? Now, this was not a surprising question either, like number two. So how do you keep the fun alive? Fun is such a value for people that are just starting out, isn't it?
Oh, it's part of our society. And I've got to say, it's a good part of our society. Part of hyper-individualism is fulfilling that sense of pleasure, want, and just fun. And to see, let's say, our children who are married at the moment, you know, have their fun, okay, is just wonderful. And so there's lots of laughter, there's lots of pleasure, there's a lot of contentment, and a lot of just hanging out together in that sense of it just feels good to be together.
Yeah.
And that is part of today's society. And thank goodness that we are so prosperous, because it means that so many of us are able to experience so much fun in life.
Yeah. But this is a very interesting response, because it's not just how do you keep your marriage fun, but it's how do you keep your marriage fun and not boring. So there's a bit of a fear there. And actually, sorry, I do actually find that in my students, that they're worried when I tell them to have a technology-free day or something, that they will get bored.
Yeah.
There is a fear there.
Yeah.
So fun is the antidote to boredom, I guess. So
yeah.
Seemingly.
Yeah. So it looks as though we're touching upon a very fundamental aspect of human life. And that is the balance between familiarity and a stable existence, which we all actually like. We like certainty. We like being able to see the same people around us every day. And variety, doing something new. For our holidays, for example, we may go to see a new city or a new country or do something different. And that becomes fun. And so in a sexual sense, people think that having somebody new is going to be exciting, whereas to be with the same person is boring. In a relationship, there's something that happens, because the human being that you are together with is actually as deep as a universe. They have so many layers that the more you are with somebody, the more that you uncover new stuff. So if you're constantly meeting somebody new, there's actually a whole lot of boring stuff you've got to do.
Oh, so true.
Hello, what's your name?
All the
Where
small
do you
talk.
Live?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
do you do? What do you think about this? And it's all the same. And getting to know new people can be quite boring and tedious, quite frankly.
Yes, I totally agree. It's so wonderful to be known by someone and not have to go through all of those ridiculous preliminaries.
Yeah, whereas when you've got a good friend that you've known for years
yes.
and years, you pick up where you are and you go deeper. So if you have a love partner that you've been together with for decades, you actually pick up at a deeper level every day. Now, this is idealistic, that this is assuming that the relationship is functioning well.
Yes.
And people do get estranged from each other and start living lonely lives, but they can come back together and say, hey, I've missed out on you. Since we had kids, I've become distant from you. And then you just get onto that process of getting to know them again. What have you experienced about the kids? Here's been my experience. Here's what I've been thinking about. And then you just hop back on the track of having a deep relationship again, and you start to discover new things. That's the amazing thing about a long-term relationship. It's new every day.
You're starting to give some very interesting tips that do answer these questions, because I want to share some more of the questions about the boring side of relationships that the young couples were worried about. How do you keep it interesting after being with someone that long and that person basically knowing everything about you? how do you keep from getting bored in like year 30? And
year 30, that was a hard year.
Oh, yeah, tell
it?
You, yeah, I remember that one. 30, totally yeah. bored out of my mind. don't you get tired of being with the same person day in and day out for that long? So there is this idea of having to have freshness, keeping it interesting, keeping it alive, that they keep thinking that you need to infuse your relationship with, and they're very, very concerned about this.
Yes, yes. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into the brain to answer some of this, because it was decades and decades ago that science used to think that once you grew up as an adult, your brain was fixed like a computer, and that's what your brain was going to be. And it would just think about each different situation in the same way. We now know that that's wrong, that every day your brain is actually different. Your brain has not only billions or trillions, but quadrillions of connections that are new and different. And here's what I think, they're interesting, which means that the brain that you have sees life in a different way, but also the other brain that you're living with, your partner, sees life in a different way. And these two brains cross-fertilize each other so that the connections that these brains are making of all those little tentacles that we talk about, of the dendrites inside each neuron, become more and more complex because two brains are getting to know each other. So I'm getting a bit technical, but what I want to say is that that person that you're living with has a brain that is new and more complex and more interesting every day. And that is what keeps people from being boring, okay? It actually means that it's like you're discovering a new person every day. But rather than ask, what's your name, where do you live, what do you do, you're asking, what's your experience of life now? How does that build on what we talked about last week or last year? Or do you remember when we first met? Oh, my God, aren't we different now? Thank goodness.
Oh, that's so good. I love that, because it's two universes, and then these two universes that have come together are expanding all the time and growing. So there's always something new to discover each day. And sharing, obviously, having good communication and sharing all of that is really essential to keeping everything alive in the marriage. And there is, it is fathomless then.
So the way I see it is, this goes back to that comment that is right at the beginning of the book of, how do you stop the external world impinging on the internal world of your relationship? When you're young, because it looks like all your new and varied experiences come from the outside world, which they mainly do, there's this idea that you've got to keep having new input into your relationship to keep it new. Whereas it's actually the internal world of your relationship, the way that your two brains have developed and moved and built a world of their own, an emotional world, an imagination world, a fantasy world, and a mental world growing together. It's the internal world of your two brains that generates all that newness, so that the outside world starts looking really boring.
I love that. Yes, and that's exactly what it is. They're thinking that, you know, they have to have new infusions, they have to have more friends over, they have to, you know, go and have all these experiences, whereas their relationship and doing those things together, the experiences together, expands their world even more. And it's so wonderful, and it's so much deeper than anything that you can have from these sort of temporary infusions of pleasure from the world or from other people.
Yes, yes. So let me sum that up by going back into the brain, that it is most definitely true that the brain takes in information from the outside world, from its five senses. We actually have more than five senses, but I'm going to stick to five at the moment, of what it can see, hear, feel, touch, and taste, to create an inner world. And it renews that information from the outside all the time. But when you're in a relationship, that inner world becomes much more important, because even just through making eye contact, your brain is communicating with another brain, to create a deeper inner world, so that the things that you imagine together, so that the things that you talk about together, so that the things that you experience together, that you experience with nobody else, makes up more of that inner world. So that, and this is what makes things like lovemaking deeper, because you're actually not accessing just somebody's body, which is what happens when you're having sex with somebody that you meet who is new, but you're accessing their brain and their mind and all that they are as you grow deeper together.
Oh, I love that. And of course, that is, of course, then a deeper pleasure than the temporary pleasure that you can get from things in the world.
Yes, yes, because all we ever have is now. And with two people, the brain now has grown more than it was yesterday or a year ago, which means that in a couple of months, a couple of weeks, a couple of years, the brains are going to grow, and they grow together to create a more interesting world. Now again, I do know that I speak idealistically sometimes, but this is when a relationship is working together well. Even when a relationship is not working well, when two people reconcile and say, no, we're back on track, it changes the meaning of the past, so that two brains say, okay, so we had problems, but it got us to a point where we moved back together. So all of a sudden, the meaning of that past becomes vital to creating a shared future.
Great. So it's so wonderful the way you describe that. And well, it's actually what goes on. No one really talks about this.
Well, no one does. No one does, because we live life through the lens of an individual. But the science is showing us that there are huge portions of our brain that are dedicated to other people. And so particularly a place like the anterior cingulate gyrus, whenever I look at, let's say, you, my anterior cingulate gyrus hooks up with your anterior cingulate gyrus, so that we are resonating together, so that we get back into a force field that is only ours. And with other people, you have less of a connection, but it is still there. And that's what makes, for me, the big incentive of making sure that you are in a long-term relationship and that it's firing well. That takes a lot of effort. There are a lot of things along the way, but I think our next question will touch upon that.
It will. I just have to say that I know that is your favorite brain part, but I'm not really sure that is sort of an illustration of true romance, the two anterior cingulate gyruses resonating together. I think it's a little bit more than that.
You think so?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, by the way, my anterior cingulate gyrus would like to take your anterior cingulate gyrus out for dinner tonight. How does that sound?
Sounds great, but not romantic enough. I think I might need a little bit more than that. Thanks.
All right. Okay. We'll get the limbic systems to go along as well.
Oh, goodness me, Christian. Such a psychiatrist. Ugh. Okay, let's go to the fifth question that was asked. How do you keep connected and communicate well? So this is a lot about all the questions are, how do you stay connected? How do you communicate? How the hell do you learn to communicate well to each other when you're so different? It's all about communication and the connection that comes through communication.
Oh, such a good question. Such a good question. Very insightful, because look, our book is basically based on that first question. How did you keep your relationship together so long? But for me, from my point of view, if there's another question that's really important, it's this one. How do you stay emotionally connected and communicate well enough so that you do stay together in the long run? And I suppose this is the question that really talks about all the effort that needs to go into a relationship. And we talk about how wonderful a relationship is, but often we don't talk about how much effort it is as well. If your relationship is good, it takes a whole lot of effort. If your relationship is not going well, it takes a whole lot more effort. So being as lazy as I am, I encourage people to go for a good relationship, because it's a whole lot less work.
I just want to share a comment that has to do with what you were talking about on the previous question, which was about getting to know each other more, because that's so important to that good communication and connection. This was a couple that had been together for only around for about 15 years, actually. This is ones that have been together a bit longer. This is a really insightful comment. They said, when we're unsure within the relationship, we become brittle and cautious. We're happier when we're a little rougher in communication with each other, making fun, being demanding, saying no, trying to be polite because we have friction only drains the play from our relationship and makes everything more strained. So we've learned to be rougher with each other when we communicate, and that adds more fun to our relationship.
Oh, that's such a good, insightful comment. It really is. And it also brought in the idea of play.
Yeah.
And I just love that, the sense of play that's in a relationship, because in a way, your relationship is an arena, a playground, a sandpit, if you want, where you can actually be yourself and play a little bit. And if you feel that freedom, it may take effort in building a sandcastle, but the fun is still there.
I also like the idea that they've obviously thought that there is one way that you should communicate. You should be polite to each other. You should do things this right way. There's this right way of communicating to, you know, be respectful to the other, or maybe from their own childhood modelling from their parents, I'm not sure. But they've tried this. It's not worked. And it's just got them tied in knots more, that communication style. So they've thought, okay, let's just be a bit rougher with each other. Let's just say things as they are. And that's our way of communicating. They've found their way of communicating that works for them.
Yeah, and that's totally in line with the way that the evidence and the literature are going, because let's say about 25 years ago, it was all the rage to make sure that a couple were communicating well to keep their relationship together. And so there's this idea in society that you've got to communicate well, otherwise your relationship is not going to stay together. Well, what the studies actually found is you can teach couples how to communicate well and they would still fall apart.
Yeah.
And the studies also showed that you don't have to communicate well to have a good relationship. And this is in line with some of the findings that we found in our studies, that couples will work it out themselves. The important thing is actually to be together and accept being together. And I won't say always enjoy being together, but to put in the effort to stay together and find your own ways of resolving conflict and being together so that you grow together. Now, I say that because a lot of people feel under pressure to be good communicators, and some people are not good with words. Some people are not good with emotions. They can't articulate themselves. That's okay. That's what the science is saying now. It's okay to be yourself. In fact, perhaps the most important thing in a relationship is to truly be yourself, which is what this couple was saying. Don't be polite. Yeah. Be rough.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And find your own communication approach that works for you as a couple. And if it is one person that is quieter and the other one is more chimp-like and talks a lot, well, that's the way that you do communication, and that's okay. There's not that right or wrong way. Whatever is working for you, and you're still being able to communicate your needs.
Yes.
Whether it's even, you know, for being quieter about things and through different kinds of communication language, right? Writing little notes or there's lots of different communication languages, and there's body language, there's touch, there's so many more communication languages to keep the couple connected.
Yeah, so there's one thing that we like to share, that the love is in the trying. Because when you hear podcasts like this or you read the books, and people like us will say, oh, this is what works. And then you go, damn, I can't do that. I can't articulate my needs very well, or I don't say what I mean all the time, or I can't be romantic. And so there's this pressure to be a certain way. The thing is that if you can try to fulfill your partner's needs, the love is in the trying. If your partner is able to say to you, this is what I need from you, okay, I need you to shut up occasionally, I need you to just not fill the whole air with words all the time, well, I guarantee when somebody says that to you that you will fail. But if they see that you're trying, that's where the love is. Thank you for trying. And so to appreciate one another where you're trying to just be the person that the other person wants you to be, knowing that you're going to fail, that's what shows love.
Mm. Sometimes the love is in the failing too.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Because you've at least tried.
Yeah.
You know, you've gone and said, I'm going to try and love you in the way that you need to be loved. Or I'm going to try and communicate more, or I'm going to try and, yeah, or not force you to communicate so much. It's sometimes even that.
Yes.
Yeah, there's this pushing from one partner to say, you're not communicating, you know, and just letting them be.
Yeah, which harks back to another question that one of the younger couples asked. How do you make sure that petty little things don't come up all the time? Well, they do.
They do.
Okay. They do.
They're going to
because we each have a personality, which means that we all do life in a certain way. We have mannerisms, perhaps from our cultural background, perhaps from our family, perhaps from our prior experiences, and it shapes the way we do things, and sometimes it's even annoying for our partner. Mm. And try as you may, you'll find it very difficult to change. So the love is in the trying. Look, I'm trying to get it right. And the love is also in the failing when the other person says, thank you for trying. Mm. I don't actually expect you to succeed.
Yeah.
It'd be nice, but I don't expect it.
And also for the younger couples, in the failing, you're showing your vulnerability, aren't you?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And that's not often easy because you've come in from a dating situation where you're, you know, you've put on certain fronts and masks, but little by little, that vulnerability is what's actually going to bind you together closer.
Well, the vulnerability does bind you closer together. That's so well said. And also that feeling that somebody's going to take the risk of being vulnerable in front of you.
Mm.
So, in other words, it's a real honor for somebody to be vulnerable, let down their guard, show the real them, as ugly as it is sometimes, and trust you with it. And know that you're going to be okay. And you're going to affirm who they are and encourage and accept who they are, even when they fall down. And guess what? Maybe even put out a hand to say, come on, I'll just help you up again.
Oh, that's lovely. Okay, so that's our five points. Have you got any more tips or anything else that you'd like to say finish off?
Let's summarize the 5 points.
Yeah, okay.
Can you go through the 5?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so the first one we know, the first one is, how did you do it? How did you stay together so long?
Yes.
And that's what the bulk of what we do is based on, but it's the other 4.
Yeah, so the first is, what is your secret to staying together? The second is the spark still there? The third is, how do you stop arguing and get through hard times? Number 4 is, how do you keep your marriage fun and not boring? And number 5 is, how do you keep connected and communicate well?
Okay, so we've got the concerns about, is sex still going to be there? Which means that sex is important. Arguing, can we do a bit less of it? Which shows that arguing is a problem. Fun, and we all want more
fun.
Of it. But the interesting thing that you brought out was that it wasn't just the fun, but the not boring part.
Mm,
okay.
Mm. Fear of being of it getting boring.
Yeah.
Really, yeah.
And the last one was the connection. How do you keep the good connection and the good communication going? And I suppose what I want to emphasize in this podcast is all of those questions show that young people want, or at least these young people, want their relationships to last. The thing is that we can't shy away from effort because relationships take a lot of effort, but it's worthwhile effort, and that you actually go deeper, that you become a deeper person, the other person becomes a deeper person, and that every day that you're together, you're sharing at a deeper and deeper level. That kind of keeps you going.
It certainly does. I do want to just tell you that we obviously asked that first question, what is your secret?
Yes.
To couples that were married 40 plus years in our largest study of 1,112 coupled individuals. So if you would like to go and hear their answers to that question, that's on one of our other episodes, one of our earlier episodes, actually, and you can hear some of those responses. But I think that might be it for today. We're really hoping that you've got some great gems from this. It's wonderful to see that people younger do want their relationships to last, are seeking long-term relationships. We'll be back in another month with another podcast on resilient relationships. But remember, your relationship is your greatest asset.
Your relationship is your greatest asset. It takes work. Invest in your greatest asset to yield the returns.
We'll see you next time.
See you next time.